Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There's a lot of these unrestricted free agents that thought they could sign on July 1st. Well, it's now a week after July 1st, and it's often what happens is the second day, they don't get signed the first day, they get signed the second day. Well, they didn't get signed the second day, and like Jake Gardner, for instance, everybody thought, oh, he gets $6.5 million. Well, he's still sitting there. I think what teams are thinking now is, we might give you the money, but we're not giving you the term. Teams just aren't given term, very few of them, and a prime example is Johansson, who played in Boston and was very good in the playoffs last year, was looking for $4.5 million over about 5 years. He got $4.5 million over 2 years in Buffalo, signed it and said, thank you very much. And you're not finding enough players going to their agents and saying, you know what, I'll bet on myself. I'll sign a one-year contract for $2.5 million or something like that. And then if I have a really good year, the following year I'll get $5 million. They're still out there hoping. And that's what the owners are probably looking at, is some of the unrestricteds like Zingle and Broussard, who are there, and they're probably going to outweigh them and see what, you know, if 1st of August, if they haven't signed, then you want to come here? If not, well, we'll play it by ear. Go to camp and see what happens.
Welcome to the Oil Spills Podcast for Wednesday, July 10th, 2019. I'm your host, Craig Ellingson, and with me today is Hockey Hall of Fame writer Jim Matheson. We're talking about the Edmonton Oilers and their quest for a top six forward. Whether that comes via trade, free agency, we'll see what happens, if anything. Also want to let you know about a special deal with the Edmonton Journal Online. Sign up today for a free 30-day subscription. Go to edmontonjournal.com/podcast. It's been a strange summer since we still have all these free agents on the board. Like a year ago, I think almost everybody was spoken for. There was only a handful that were, you know, notable names that hadn't signed somewhere. But now there's all kinds of options out there for every team, including the Oilers. I mean, the common wisdom is the Oilers need to add a top six forward to play with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, if not on the top line. But the Nuge needs someone to play with. He needs a winger.
I don't think you can go into the season
without one.
Without one. You can go through training camp and see what you've got.
Sure. But you've been taking a chance by doing the PTO thing.
You can in today's game, there aren't lines anyway, they're pairs. And so Draisaitl and McDavid are a pair, and if it's Zach Cassian playing there for 20 games, and then Alex Chiasson plays there for another 20 games, and then somebody else plays, you know, then you go back to Cassian, you're fine. But the second line, Nugent Hopkins, who is he playing with? Like, you're penciling in
Nygaard?
People like Nygaard, who hasn't played a minute in the NHL, and said, oh, he's the second line left winger. Oh, really? Okay. Well, who's the second line right winger? And it's Chiasson, because he got 22 last year. Well, there's a lot of ifs there. They need one established top six forward who, whether you go out and you sign him as a off the unrestricted free agent shelf and give him $2.5 million for 1 year, they need somebody for 1 year, because Nugent Hopkins cannot go through an entire season playing by himself. And that's, it behooves the Oilers. It's easier to perhaps buck up for $2.5 million than it is to trade dollars in, dollars out. And say, oh, that's great. We'll trade Chris Russell's $4 million, and we'll get back some forward that a team doesn't want for $4 million who can play in the wing. It's easier just to, I think, for the Oilers to hold on and see if they can find somebody for $2.5 million.
See, I was going to try to structure our talk today about this. You know, talk about first the trading options. Do they trade a defenseman to try to get this forward? Whether it's, it could be anybody. I mean, there's only two defensemen, Benning or Russell.
It's only one of the, and right. Benning is a lot cheaper and mm-hmm. his contract is up and he's $1.9 million. But Matt Benning is perceived to be a third pairing NHL defenseman. And I think he's a good third pairing defenseman. I think he gets a bad rap here. Every young defenseman's better than Matt Benning. Well, Matt Benning's already played several years in the league and can be a second power play guy, and he's a right shot. I think he gets a bad rap, and he's priced just fine, $1.9 mm-hmm. million.
Yeah. So, which would make him attractive, but then you're getting
for $1.9 million, you're getting a third line player, not a second line player.
Unless you think defensemen are more valuable than
maybe, and then you'd have to hope that a team sees Matt Benning as a solid second pairing guy. Mm.
And depending on the other team's cap situation, like there's some teams that are, in more of a jam than others because they have to sign players that, that's going to spring loose. They're going to have to make a decision on trading somebody or getting rid of somebody.
The problem with the Oilers the last couple of years is you're taking from Peter to pay Paul. If they trade Benning or Russell for a forward, then they don't have enough vet experienced NHL defensemen to go with Nurse, Larson, and Klefbom. It's nice to say you've got Caleb Jones is going to make the team and this Joel Person from Sweden is going to make the team. And maybe another player from the Bakersfield is going to make the team. So what, suddenly you have three of your top seven defensemen are going to be guys who haven't played in the NHL much. I think that's a stretch. You could pick somebody up off the waiver wire, I guess, and end of September before the regular season.
They already have Brandon Manning, but they don't want him.
They don't want him. They don't want to pay that salary in the NHL. They mm-hmm. don't want to pay $2.5 million or $2.25 million rather for a defenseman who could be your sixth or seventh. They don't want to pay that. So they don't just need a second line winger. For Nugent Hopkins, they need a third line center. So they need two pieces, to be honest. And then, like I said, they're counting on a Swiss player named Haas to be a third line center who's never played a minute in the league just because he shoots right and he was a pretty good player in Switzerland. That's another stretch. You can't count on guys who've been in Europe to come in and play on your team and be really good right away. They're just not, unless you're talking Gusev in Las Vegas, who's the best player in the KHL and a Russian. He's going to probably step in like Panarin did and be really good. But for the most part, Europeans come on over to North America, takes them a while.
And I bring this up probably more often than I should, but are there any sacred cows on defense? I mean, what about Klefbom, Larson, and Nurse? I mean, why wouldn't you entertain if you can get the right return? But I don't know what the trade market's like. Those are probably harder deals to make because of how important they are in the defensive structure of the team.
Well, with Klefbom and Larson, those are well-priced players.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Do you really want to trade a player who can play in your top four, only making $4 million?
So you can have an effective second scoring line with Nugent Hopkins?
Yeah.
Maybe.
But that player then better be making four.
Heaven forbid a right winger player.
You can't be trading a solid, well-priced defenseman at $4.1 million for a forward at $6 million, I don't think.
Well, why not?
No, I don't think so. I guess you could, but then you better have a defenseman ready to take. You're talking the top three defensemen on the team. You better have a defenseman who can take their spot. It's one thing to trade Russell or Benning, who are not perceived to be top three. You better have a defenseman ready to replace one of those guys. Their minutes, 20 minutes a game.
I just go back to the nibbling around the edges thing. I mean, if you really want to make a significant change to your team, you got to give to get something. You can't get something for nothing.
No, and I don't know how Ken Holland views his team. He looks at all the names on his wall of everybody in the organization and looks at McDavid and looks at Draisaitl and looks at Nugent Hopkins. And then there's a pause for 30 seconds and he says, and there's McDavid and there's Nugent Hopkins and there's Draisaitl. And then there's a whole lot of question marks and ifs and if ands and buts after that. So he's not done.
So how do you add that fourth name without developing it and waiting for a couple more years?
Good question. You know, I would have thought that, you know, the number one target would still be Nick Ehlers in Winnipeg if they're going to sign Connor and Laine, but they may have to wait all summer to sign Laine and Connor.
And that's probably what we're talking
Marner
about.
Until Marner gets signed,
Laine.
You know, they might just wait all summer and say, hey, this is what they're getting. And
wow, it's kind of like the NBA waiting for Kawhi Leonard to orchestrate trades in the background in order to determine where he's going to go.
Well, it's the agents. The agents, they don't want to jump in first. Remember last year they had the thing with Josh Morrissey in Winnipeg and Darnell Nurse in Edmonton, both perceived to be top four defensemen. And they tried to outweigh one another to see who would sign the contracts. And then they both, you know, got about the same money, the bridge contracts for, you know, in the threes, not the sixes. So, you know, that's the way it works. You know, nobody wants to jump in.
Well, except
the one contract which has screwed up, I'm sure, a lot of these players that are waiting to be signed is San Jose getting Timo Meier for, you know, effectively $6 million a year, 4, 4, 6, and 10. Now, last year at 10, he has to be qualified at $10 million to keep his rights. So, in effect, you know, they're willing to pay him that kind of money down the road, but not now. So, but like I said, these are all questions for the Oilers with $3.9 million in cap space. And somehow, a team like Colorado, which is wheeling and dealing, and plays in the Western Conference and is a really good team, has $20 million in cap space. And a team like San Jose, even though they went out and got Erik Karlsson and they have three defensemen making, you know, like 11 and 7 is 18, and they have like $25 million in three defensemen, they're still able to get Meier signed. And they're still able to get Kevin LeBanc, who got 56 points last year, signed at 1 year at $1 million. So some teams are, and Toronto's the same way. They got all their players they wanted to keep signed. Traded away Kadri.
Added Tyson Barrie.
And added Tyson Barrie for 1 year because they're they're in it for now, and they managed to do it, and they haven't signed Marner yet. So some teams are doing it. The Oilers, but with a $3.9 million in cap space, that's not much wiggle room if you want to keep $1.5 million, you know, available in case you trade for a player during the season or pick up somebody off waivers.
I mean, who would be the trading partners for the Oilers and if they did deal as, you know, a Russell or a Benning? We talked about Winnipeg a lot because of their situation there, and they need to sign Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor.
I think
and
Winnipeg
others.
Would certainly be in my top three.
Mm-hmm. Would a team like the Rangers be?
No, Rangers are trying to get. They just got Trouba and they got Adam Fox from Calgary in a trade.
They have to sign Trouba to a deal, right?
They sign Trouba to a new deal, and they want to dump Shattenkirk, you know, somehow. So they've got enough defensemen. They're trying to dump a player rather than add a defenseman. I think it's always easier to. The marketability for a defenseman is always higher within your own conference. They see them play, they know what you got. The Eastern teams, you know, you're dealing with a little bit more unknown in terms of what the Oilers would get back to. They're used to seeing these players in the Western Conference.
Well, there's the Kings and the Golden Knights. I mean, the Golden Knights were shedding players.
I think the Kings would be another possibility. They don't have
Anaheim,
And Anaheim, they don't have a great defense. The Kings and Todd McClellan loves Chris Russell from his days here. So that's a possibility. This is the second year on Chris Russell's contract, which probably scares a lot of teams for the cap hit anyway, $4 million. The salary is not as $4 million, but the cap hit is $4 million. So, and LA has this history of picking up older players, and they're trying to get younger. Do you want to trade for another 30-plus player in Chris Russell. Now, if Todd McClellan has anything to say about it, he's probably looking at it and says, "If at worst, Chris Russell's in my third pairing." And but, you know, are they going to trade Tyler Toffoli for Chris Russell?
Well, yeah, that's the question. What do they have?
What do they have to trade?
What are they willing? What would they be willing to trade if they did want a Chris Russell?
Yeah.
Never mind a Matt Benning.
Yeah. So defensemen are easier to trade than forwards because teams always need defensemen, but there has to be some forward coming back who's, you know, is not just a forward in name only. It has to be a forward that you can pencil in and say, yeah, for sure he's. But if it's Chris Russell, are you getting a top six winger? I don't know.
I don't know. For $4 million, yeah. Or considering his cap hit.
There's lots of names out there. But, you know, Robbie Fabry in St. Louis. They have lots of forwards. They have to sign Barbashev and Sundqvist, two big parts of their fourth line in the Stanley Cup winning team. Fabry has been hurt a lot, has tons of ability. They just signed Sanford for $1.5 million. Fabry would be a possibility, but he's hurt all the time. So then you're gambling on trading for a guy who, you know, might play 25 games and get hurt his knee again.
You know, moving on to the free agent fronts, and, you know, there's, you've already mentioned Ryan Zingle, and he's probably, what, the top name on the list. I mean, traded to Columbus from Ottawa last year and didn't.
He would be the one who would fit in the best for 1 year. I think he could test drive him for 1 year. And I don't think he has much marketability. I think he turned down a big contract in Ottawa. They ended up trading him to Columbus. He didn't play well in Columbus. They made no effort whatsoever to sign him in the summer. In fact, they went out and signed Nyquist instead. They had Zingle there. If he'd played well enough, they'd have, considering they lost all those players, you know, Panarin and Duchesne at forward, you'd think they'd say, hey, we got to sign this guy, but they didn't make any effort to sign him. So I think if you're the Oilers and every other team, you're test driving Zingle for 1 year and saying, you know, we'll sign you for 2.5 or whatever and prove to us you're worth 5.
Is Pat Maroon a viable second line
option?
No,
he's not, because they have Lucic. If they didn't have Lucic, yes, but I don't think you can have two of those players on the same team. So I would say no. I feel badly for Pat Maroon. I think he's a good player. He's trying to get a 2-year contract, not a 1-year. He said a 1-year contract in St. Louis for less money than he probably wanted, but it was St. Louis, so he'd go home and see his boy. I think Pat Maroon, his best chance would probably be to sign back in New Jersey. They wanted him. They traded for him. And he opted to go back to St. Louis. So there's not a lot of players out there. And it's going to be a 1-year contract for any of those guys. If Ken Holland's pretty patient. We'll see if he outwaits some of these agents, some of the players, and gets a guy for 1 year.
You know, former Flame Michael Ferland played last year in Carolina. He's a free agent,
too. He's kind of in between a Maroon and a Lucic. I think he's a good player. I don't know why he just didn't stay in Carolina where he had a good thing there. His stats are good, but his star dimmed in the second half last year. He got hurt, and I covered that series with Carolina and the Islanders, and they were waiting for him to come back and play, and a couple of times you'd ask Rod Binnimer, so when's Ferland coming back? And he says, well, when he tells us he's coming back. In other words, like there's some situation here. We don't know exactly what's wrong with him, but he's going to tell us when he can play. And he did come back, I think, late in the third round series. He's a good player, and he's another player. You test drive him. If you want him, if we want him at 2.5, fine. And you can see how he is. I think, considering the Oilers should know him pretty well, Holland wouldn't know him as well as the Oiler guys who've seen him play for Calgary. It's, you know, I guess between he and Zingle, I think they need more speed. I think it's a speed game now, and Zingle's faster. Mm. I would take Zingle more than Ferland myself. But, I mean, I don't know.
And again,
it's
the
not
Oilers,
like you're walking down the aisles in a supermarket and
grabbing a box of cereal.
Or you're looking to find the one you really want.
Yeah, because there are other teams out there that need the same things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about $2-2.5 million. You know, obviously the Oilers are one of those teams that are very close to the cap, but
if you sign a player for 2.5, then you've got $1.4 million left. Then you don't have enough money to go and get a third line center.
Yeah, never mind whatever happens on those PTOs. What if somebody does shine? Obviously these are all parts of the puzzle that a GM has to put together, and you know, it's why they're getting paid the money. They have to make it work somehow.
The only dollars in, dollars out trade out there, I think, is Puljujärvi for some other young player. If Puljujärvi, you're losing a player who is an NHL player. So you better trade for some player who can play on your team. Now, is that, you know, if you trade a young player who's a first-round pick for some other team's first-round pick who is perceived to be not as good as you thought it would be, I think that's still worth a chance for the Oilers. You can say, at least we can slot this guy in. We know what he is. He's a third-line player. And one third-line player is better than a player playing in Finland. So it doesn't look like he's back in Finland working out with Sebastian Aho and some other Finnish players right now, waiting to find out what's going on. So he's a lot closer to playing for Jokerit in Helsinki, working out in Finland, than he is working out here.
You know, I can't help but think that if the Oilers did go out and trade Russell Benning, somebody off their defense, for this forward they need, all depending on what's coming back and what the cap situation is after that happens. And there are some defensemen out there who are veterans who you could probably get relatively cheaply, all depending on the timing. Because that's what the Oilers did in the first place with Chris Russell.
They got him though, right?
Although for $4 million a year.
Yeah, they got him before the season started. One year contract. They're there, but it's a game for these GMs, and they're trying to outweight these players to where they'll take whatever you want to give them rather than a tryout. And I think that's why guys get signed in late August rather than right now. I would have no trouble if I was the Oilers, considering the strength in the organization is their young defensemen, to try their young defensemen in exhibition games and see if they look like they're actual NHL players. I mean, Benning came to camp 3 years ago, and you're thinking, oh, okay, so they signed this guy from Northeastern University in Boston, and he's from Edmonton. Does that mean he's going to play right away in the NHL? And they thought he could play, and it turned out he could play. And, you know, he made it, and David Musil then became kind of the odd man out, and he never did play much for the Oilers. I think he played 4 games for him, but didn't play after that. So it's a gamble. But is Ethan Bear an NHL player? Is William Lagesson an NHL player? Is Caleb Jones? Probably, because he played 17 games last year. Is this person an NHL player? Yeah, I guess so, because you signed him to a 1-year contract. But you better, let's try him in training camp and see. I think there's a better chance they get a defenseman on waivers off another team than signing somebody. Or bring their own tryout guys to camp if you want.
You know, the Oilers aren't going to be presenting any RFAs with an offer sheet, but, you know, it is a rare thing for it to happen. The Montreal Canadiens did present one to Sebastian Aho of the Hurricanes. Of course, you know, Carolina did match it.
It didn't make it punitive enough.
Yeah.
They didn't want to give up 4 draft picks. They only wanted to give up 3, but because they only wanted to give up 3, then they didn't make it punitive enough in terms of dollars for, I guess they were counting on this big signing bonus that he was going to get, that the owner wouldn't pay it. But this owner's got tons of money, Tom Dundon. So he just kind of laughed it off and said, thank you very much. I think you have to make the team that's making an offer sheet, it has to hurt them as much as it hurts the other team. They're looking at the pain, you know, differently than the team that's losing a player. They're thinking, okay, we'll live up, we'll live with these draft picks down the road. We need the player right now. And the other team is just got to bet on saying, okay, well, these draft picks we're getting, we'll find a player to replace Sebastian Aho right now and use these draft picks down the road.
I was a little surprised that it seems like Marc Bergevin, the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, got snookered. That's what it seems like, because the terms seemed, I mean, the salary seemed fine, the term fine, but even the threat of having to pay all that money up front, it's like you said, Tom Dundon is a billionaire. It's not going to dissuade
him. But if
he
really wanted him, offer Sebastian Aho $10 million a year.
Yeah.
And not $8.5 million, where the team that was had him, Carolina, was looking more around $6 million. So $8.5 million, it's too much, but they could probably live with it. Heck of a lot of difference between $6 million and $10 million. So they didn't make it difficult enough. They went through the whole process thinking that, I guess, Carolina was going to blink and say, yeah, give us the draft picks and we'll lose this guy. Well, he's their best player. They're not losing him. And they didn't make it. They were so worried about losing all these draft picks, they made the dollar figure too low. And they should have gambled. Said, hey, no, $10 million.
You know, and I bring up the offer sheet thing because the last time a team successfully pulled it off was the Oilers in 2007 with Dustin Penner. I mean, they had tried for Thomas Vanek, Buffalo matched, and now... But then they went and targeted Penner. And, you know, the conventional wisdom probably is still the same today as it was back 12 years ago. You know, GMs don't want to be going around poaching guys just because of, you know, was it sportsmanship?
Well, they're worried about somebody doing it to them.
Exactly, yeah.
But then teams always match it. You know, if you really like your player, you're matching it.
Yeah. Trying to screw everybody.
You're trying to, you know, it's like with Marner. Rest assured, if somebody makes an offer sheet on Marner, Toronto will figure out some way to match it and then dump some other players. Suddenly, William Nylander is available. They'll just match it. So, I mean, it's a lot of work for these offer sheets for not much gain, as far as I can see, unless you go to a team that's right up, like Vegas. Vegas is over the salary cap. They can't afford players. So now they're trading players for draft picks. They're giving away players. Eric Hall, Colin Miller, just giving them away. Now it's this Gusev, who star in KHL, they'll trade him for draft picks. They can't afford to take back another player. So, but not many teams like that. Just giving players away.
That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. Subscribe to Oil Spills on iTunes and Google Play. You can also listen to it via the Edmonton Journal and Edmonton Sun apps and websites.